Good morning, everyone. We are reading in Book 11, the Book of Everlasting Day, and we've reached the top of page 688 at the break. We are following the colloquy, the dialogue between that wonderful Godhead who is the source of this glorious world of everlasting day, and Savitri. He has told her that it's not possible for her to take living Satyavan back with her to the earth. Instead, he's invited her to enter his heaven and to be with Satyavan there forever. And she replied to him that she cannot abandon her mission. She says that, "I know that I can lift man's soul to God. I know that he can bring the immortal down." And earlier she had said, "Too far thy heavens for me from suffering men. Imperfect is the joy not shared by all." So she's refusing his invitation and appealing to him to complete the work that he has started by sending her and Satyavan to the earth. So now he will reply to her. You like to begin? Page 688, at the top, at the break.
"Then, with a smile, august as noonday heavens, the Godhead of the vision wonderful, how shall earth nature and man's nature rise to the celestial levels, yet earth abide? Heaven and earth towards each other gaze, across a gulf that few can cross, none touch, arriving through a vague ethereal mist, out of which all things form that move in space, the shore that all can see but never reach. Heaven's light visits sometimes the mind of earth. Its thoughts burn in her sky like lonely stars. In her heart there move celestial seekings soft and beautiful like fluttering wings of birds. Visions of joy that she can never win traverse the fading mirror of her dreams. Faint seeds of light and bliss bear sorrowful flowers. Faint harmonies caught from a half-heard song, fall swooning mid the wandering voices jar. Foam from the tossing luminous seas where dwells the beautiful and far delight of gods. Raptures unknown, a miracled happiness, thrill her and pass half-shaped to mind and sense. Above her little finite steps she feels, careless of naught or pause, worlds which weave out a strange perfection beyond law and rule, a universe of self-found felicity, an inexpressible rhythm of timeless beats, the many movemented heartbeats of the one, magic of the boundless harmonies of self, order of the freedom of the infinite, the wonder plastics of the absolute."
Cool. I think we are just reading this morning, no? Yes? The next section is quite a long one. Lyuba, continue, please.
There is the old truth, and there the timeless peace. But those are fragments of a star lost being. course, above careless visits of the hosts. They are a light that fades, a word soon hushed, and nothing they can mean can stay for long forgotten. They are high glimpses, not the lasting sight. A few can climb to one unperishing sound, or live on the edges of the mystic moon, and channel to the earth's mind the wizard wave. The heroes and the demigods are few, to whom the close immortal voices speak, and to their acts the heavenly clan are near. Few are the silences in which truth is heard, unwilling the timeless utterance in her depths. Few are the splendid moments of the seers. Heaven's call are rare the hearts that heeds. The doors of light are sealed to common mind, and the earth means nail to earth the human mass. Only in uplifting hours of stress, men answer to the touch of greater things, raised by some strong hand to breathe heaven air. They slide back to the mud from which they climbed, from the mud of which they are made, whose law they know. They joy in safe return to a friendly base, and though something in them weeps for glory lost and greatness murdered, they accept their fall. To be the common man, they think the best. To live as others live is their delight.
Thank you. Would you like to read? You will pass. Okay. You read.
For most are built on nature's early plan, and owe small debt to a superior plan. The human average in their level pitch, a thinking animal's material range. In the long, ever-mounting hierarchy, in the stark economy of cosmic life, each creature to its appointed task and place is bound by his nature's form, his spirit's force. If this were easily disturbed, it would break the settled balance of created things. The perpetual order of the universe would tremble, and a gap yawn in woven fate. If men were not, and all were brilliant gods, the mediating stair would then be lost, by which the spirit awake in matter wins, accepting the circus of the middle way. By heavy toil and slow aeonic steps reaching the bright miraculous fringe of God, into the glory of the Oversoul. My will, my call is there in men and things, but the inconscient lies at the world's gray back and draws to its breast of night and death and sleep. Imprisoned in its dark and dumb abyss, a little consciousness it lets escape, but jealous of the growing light holds back, close to the obscure edges of its cave, as if a fond, ignorant mother kept her child tied to her apron strings of nescience. The inconscient could not read without man's mind the mystery of the world its sleep has made. Man is its key to unlock a conscious doer. But still it holds him dangled in its grasp. It draws its giant circle round his thoughts. It shuts his heart to the supernal light.
Thank you.
And dazzlingly shines ever, and black and blinding burden rules. His mind is closed between two firmaments. He seeks through words and images the truth, and pouring on surface and root outsides, or dipping cautions,
cautious
feet in shallow seas. Even his knowledge is an ignorance. He is bared out from his own inner depths. He cannot look on the face of the unknown. How shall he see with the omniscient's eyes? How shall he will with the omniscient's force? Oh, too compassionate and eager dawn, leave to the circling aeons steady pace, and to the working of the inconscient will, lead to its imperfect light the earthly race.
Yes.
Earthly race, all shall be done by the long act of time.
Thank you.
Without race is bound by its own kind, the soul in man is greater than his fate. Above the wash and surge of time and space, disengaging from the cosmic commonality, by which all life is keen in grief and joy, delivered from the universal law, the sunlight single and transcendent spirit can blaze through the mind's barrier wall and burn alone in the eternal sky, inhabitant of a wide and endless sky. O flame, withdraw into thy new luminous self, or else return to thy original night on a sheer summit above thought and word, partner of my unpowered eternity. Be one with the infinity of my power. For thou art the world mother and bride. Out of the fruitless yearning of Earth's life, out of her feeble, unconvincing dream, recovering wings that cross infinity, pass back into the power from which thou camest. To that thou canst uplift thy formless flight. Thy heart can rise from its unsatisfied beats and feel the immortal and spiritual joy of a soul that never lost felicity.
Thank you.
And lift up the fallen heart of love which floods, cast down beside us abyss into the gulfs. Forever rescued out of nature's shapes, discover what the aimless cycles mourn. They're intertwined with all thy life has been here vainly sought in the terrestrial form. Break into eternity thy mortal mold, melt lightning in invisible flame, clasp ocean deep into thyself thy waving, happy forever in the encircled. Grow one with the still passion of the depths. Then shalt thou know the lover and the love, leaving the limits dividing him and thee. Receive him into boundless savitri. Lose thyself into infinite satyavan. O miracle, where thou beganst, there cease.
Shall we stop there? Go back and have a look at this passage before we go on, because there's a lot more to the end of the section. So this is this long speech of the Godhead of the vision, wonderful. And he's explaining to Savitri why he can't, it's not possible for Satyavan to go back to earth with her. Rosa, you will read? On page 688 at the break. Yeah. Abide.
Heaven and earth towards each other grace across now the you can cross non-touch. Arriving through
vague. Thank you. Savitri has expressed to him her longing to be able to stretch out her arms, her heart, to seize more hearts till love in us has filled thy world, and her wish for the transformation of the earth and a divine life here. No? But he smiles at her with a majestic smile, august. August as noonday heavens. It's like the clear sky in the middle of the day. And he asks her, how is it possible for earth nature and man's nature, human nature, to rise to the heavenly levels and yet earth remain, persist. And again he's explaining to her this separation between earth and heaven. Heaven and earth gaze to each other across a gulf, a deep gap that few can cross. Nobody can touch that gulf. They may arrive, they may cross, arriving through a vague, ethereal mist. That vague, ethereal mist, ether is the subtlest form of substance, the subtlest element. No? And that's out of which all things form, all the things that are moving here in space and in time, they have formed, they have appeared out of that ethereal mist. So he says, all can see that shore, that heavenly shore, but nobody can reach it. All can see, but never reach. Mila.
Heaven's light visits sometimes the mind of earth. It stops burning in the sky like lonely stars. If a heart celestial cities, soft and beautiful, like fluttering wings of birds, visions of joy that she can never win, traverse the fading mirror of her dreams. Pale seeds of light and bliss, bare sorrowful flowers, faint harmonies cut from a heart heard song, poems shooting meet the wandering voices from the tossing luminous seas, where dwells the beautiful and far delight of God. Raptures unknown, a mental happiness thrilled her, and passed half shape to mind and sense.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So on earth here, with our mind of earth, we do get touches, heaven's light does visit sometimes the mind of earth. The lights of heaven, the thoughts of heaven, burn in the sky in the higher level of our consciousness like lonely stars, guiding stars, stars of the ideal, no? And in the heart of earth and in our hearts, sometimes there do move these celestial seekings, the urges towards things divine. Those seekings, he says, are soft and beautiful, like fluttering wings of birds. And the mind of earth receives visions of joy, but she can never gain that joy. Just those visions traverse, they cross the fading mirror of her dreams. It must be like one of those magic mirrors that you can look into and see images of things that are far away. And she gets those visions, but then they fade away again. But those are touches of heaven. They are faint seeds of light and bliss which should sprout in the mind and the heart of earth. But unfortunately, very often, the flowers which they bear are sorrowful flowers. Earth is not able, we are not able, to achieve those heavenly dreams. We may catch some faint harmonies of a half-heard song, some divine message, but they fade away, they fall swooning as if losing consciousness amidst the wandering voices, a jarring noise, is an unpleasant, discordant sound in the ear. No? So there are so many voices in the world, in the universe. Those faint harmonies get lost in that jarring noise. Sometimes that we experience raptures unknown, a miracled happiness. He says this is like foam, the bubbles from the luminous seas, that where dwells the beautiful and far delight of God, oceans of delight. We just get faint little touches of spray from those seas. Mm? Those give us these unknown raptures, these incredible miracle touches of happiness. They thrill earth, us, and pass half-shaped to mind and sense. We get maybe some, even some physical touch or some formation in the mind, but it's only a half formation of those that spray and foam from the luminous seas of the delight of the gods.
So there's a personification of the earth.
Yes.
And there's the human nature that is, it kind of seems to go between the two, the personal, like the individual person who is within that earth, but the earth itself is also seen as a...
Yes, we are all part of the earth consciousness, no? All our individual consciousnesses. This is a, in one way, this is an opportunity. It means that an individual progress can have some effect, some impact on the general earth consciousness. But it also means that even those who have the highest experiences get dragged down by the general consciousness. That's what is being expressed, I think. But he says she, the earth, no? Of which we are all part. And what he's expressing is the difference between the earth consciousness and the heaven consciousness. Savitri wants to raise up the whole earth consciousness, the whole of humanity, to the heaven consciousness. He's telling her, forget it. Larry, would you read?
Above her little finite steps, she feels careless of not or cause worlds which weave out a strange perfection beyond law and rule, a universe of self-found felicity, an inexpressible rhythm of timeless beats, the many movemented heartbeats of the one, magic of the boundless harmonies of self, order of the freedom of the infinite, the wonder plastics of the absolute.
Thank you. Earth is the material principle. So she suffers from all the limitations which that means. So whatever progress she can make, whatever steps she can make, they are little finite steps, limited. But somehow she can feel and intuit or divine other worlds which are not limited in the same way. Worlds which weave out a strange perfection that's beyond all the laws and rules that limit our steps here in the material universe. She intuits that universe of self-found felicity, a happiness, a bliss that doesn't depend on anything. It is self-found in itself, by itself. There's this phrase at the beginning of line 630. It says, careless of not or pause. I think this is the worlds, these other worlds which she feels. They are careless of not or pause. They don't have any entanglements to work out. They are not stopped on the way. They can weave out smoothly and harmoniously this unknown perfection, this strange perfection, this wonderful rhythm, an inexpressible rhythm of timeless beats. And these beats, this inexpressible rhythm, is made up of the heartbeats of the one who is all. Those heartbeats are not fixed and regular. They are many movemented. So it makes an amazing, inexpressible rhythm of timeless beats. And that also expresses this magic of the boundless harmonies of self, of the pure self which is moving in the universe. This order of the freedom of the infinite. The infinite is free, it's not bound by any law and rule. But at the same time, it is not chaotic. There's an order, there's a harmony. And there are forms, these wonderful forms, the wonder plastics of the absolute. The word plastic has come for us to mean stuff like this. But the original meaning of the word is something that can be molded or shaped. So the word can also be used for the forms that are molded or shaped. So that's what it means here. The sculptures or all the glorious forms that the absolute creates. Tomiko? Yes.
Concerning this incident, verse 630, cameras of not or pause, you refer.
Yes, I.
Not she's lifted up in a kind of energy level that she becomes careless for the knots and pause, because those worlds.
Yes, it's also possible.
Perfect beyond law and rule. She is not being perfect. She doesn't get she's taken by the flow.
It could mean that. It could mean that.
I don't know. This is what I
tell. It still says that, above her little finite steps,
yeah.
Her little finite steps have to worry about knots and pauses, but she feels. It doesn't say she rises up. It says she feels, she gets some intuition from above. But anyway, one of the great advantages of poetry is that one can hold two meanings in your mind at the same time. Yes. And right. Perhaps the poet intends you to keep two meanings. It's not like with philosophy or science, where you have to be very precise and only mean one thing at the time and be very clear about what you mean. Poetry, which is a language of suggestion, it's quite all right to suggest more than one meaning at the time. In fact, that makes a lot of the riches of poetic language.
It's not like
it's all five thirds. So yes, it very often happens in the poem that we can think of two meanings at the same time. So perhaps this is one of those places. Sorry to make a go.
There is the old truth, and there the timeless truth. But hers are fragments of a star-lost gleam. Hers are but careless visits of the gods. They are a light that fades, a word soon husked.
Hushed.
And nothing they mean can stay for long on earth. There are high glimpses, not the lasting sight. A few can climb to an unperishing sun, or live on the edges of the mystic moon, and channel to earth mind the wizard ray. The heroes and the demigods are few to whom the close immortal voices speak, and to their acts the heavenly clan are near. Few are the silences in which truth is heard, unveiling the timeless utterance in her deep. Few are the splendid moments of the seer.
Thank you. There in heaven is the all truth and the timeless bliss. But here on earth has only fragments of star-lost gleams. Gleams that have come from the stars and got lost, maybe. Here on earth, there are only careless, occasional, casual visits of the gods. And when they come, these visits, they bring a light that fails, that fades away. They bring a message, a word that is soon silenced, and nothing they mean can stay for long on earth. They soon dissolve. On earth, there are high glimpses of the higher planes and the higher consciousness, but not the lasting sight. It is possible for a few earthly individuals, human individuals, to climb up to that unperishing sun, that everlasting, eternal sun of truth. Or they can live on the edges of the mystic moon. I think this refers to the overmind. The sun is the full light of the divine. The mystic moon has only a reflected light. It refers to the overmind. But from there, they can channel to the earth mind some ray, magical ray of that truth. The heroes and the demigods, the half-divine beings, are few. There are not many of them to whom the immortal voices speak closely, intimately. There are few to whom the heavenly clan, the tribes, the divine tribes, are near in their actions. The silences in which truth is heard are rare, but when they happen, they do unveil the timeless utterance in her deeps, in the depths, in her deeps, perhaps of the earth. Again, we can't be sure, for it applies to truth or to the earth. There are the seers, the rishis, the visionaries and prophets. They have these few splendid moments. They are not frequent.
Their visit can be seen as the avatar coming on human body, and that's what he means.
I don't think he's saying that so much. It's these momentary divine touches that human beings feel.
This context is nice. We just celebrated the darshan.
Yes.
Krishna is coming in the physical. It settles. It's not going up and down anymore. It comes apart.
That's a unique happening.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's not a common rule, like he explains here. up and down, up and down, comes and goes.
Yeah.
States.
What does Krishna mean?
One who draws to himself. Literally means, comes along, root, it means the plow. I mean.
The word akarshan. Akarshan means attraction. So it's similar means. Krishna means the one who attracts everything towards himself. Literally, that's
what. Yes, that's what he represents, no? The one who, the divine power of attraction. Once you hear the sound of his flute, you can't help following it. If you've once seen his smile, you will be able to, you have to leave everything else and follow him. No? But for Krishna, for Sri Aurobindo, he considered Lord Krishna his guru, his guide, his companion, his divine counterpart. No. So when he entered into Sri Aurobindo's physical body, Sri Aurobindo took that as the guarantee that he would be able to bring the supermind down.
When did it happen?
It's just, we've just had the anniversary, 24th of November, 1926. So what we recently celebrated was the 90th anniversary of Sri Aurobindo's Siddhi Day.
Yeah, there's a nice description in that Jain that mother tells. She sees always, when they talk about Superman, the mother sees the coming and going of what is stated in these verses that we just read, of the gods, the deities. And then she sees always Krishna close to Sri Aurobindo in this vision. Then she asks Krishna, Would you mind to go come down? And then he says yes.
Yeah,
and then Sri Aurobindo convokes all the disciples. And then she tells that Sri Aurobindo says, I withdraw, but you will take over. And then Mona says, he never asked me to do so. And she starts laughing.
He didn't ask her beforehand.
No. No. He took it for granted.
He doesn't always come in that particular form. From yuge, the avatar comes from age to age when the earth evolution requires that.
Yes.
So there's this tradition of the 10 avatars, and Lord Krishna is one in that series.
Well, those are not momentary visits, but
no.
Of course it's a different thing.
No, that's quite different.
Yeah.
And this special case of Sri Aurobindo, of the descent of Krishna consciousness into the physical body, I think this is the unique in spiritual history, so far as I know.
Edition of the All India magazine, which was on Krishna.
Just recently, yes.
Covers very nicely the major things on related to Krishna.
Yeah.
What Juan just said about coming and staying this time, I was just rereading the article that Amal wrote in February 76, Mother India, about a little known event in the ashram called the Immortality Day.
Which was yesterday.
Which was, yeah.
Yes.
So it was declared in 1926. It was 26 November 1926.
and Mother brought down the principle of immortality on the earth and put it in little bottles. I wonder where those bottles are.
But then it was celebrated annually for some years, and then it stopped. I remember Amal Kiran telling me about it.
And that's the every time is the when the day they have the sports dress rehearsal of the sports demonstration
on the 26th of November.
Yeah.
Dr. Alokpandi is speaking also in his talk about this and the August 26th. On YouTube you can see it, a lot of talks. And we played it here also.
Let's go on. Patricia. Heaven's call is rare.
Okay. Heaven's call is rare. Rarer the heart than heeds. The doors of light are sealed to common mind, and earth's needs nailed to earth the human mass. Only in an uplifting hour of stress men answer to the touch of greater things. Or, raised by some strong hand to breathe heaven air, they slide back to the mud from which they climbed. In the mud of which they are made, whose law they know, they join in safe return to a friendly base. And though something in them weeps for glory lost, and greatness murdered, they accept their fall. To be the common man, they think the best. To live as others live is their delight. For most are built on nature's early plans, and owe small debt to a superior plane. The human average is their level pitch, a thinking animal's material range. In the long, ever-mounting hierarchy, in the stark economy of cosmic life, each creature, to its appointed task and place, is bound by his nature's form, his spirit's force. If this were easily disturbed, it would break the settled balance of created things. The perpetual order of the universe would tremble, and a gap yawn in the woven fate.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about this passage?
In the third line, and earth needs nailed to earth the human mass.
We're nailed down. It's difficult for us to move upwards freely. No. We are nailed down by our needs, the needs of our physical bodies.
Uplifting our stress. Is it difficulties?
Yes. It's extreme difficulties. Those are the times when we may get inspired. No, there's one of Mother's prayers and meditations where she has, when she returned to Paris during the First World War. She saw the soldiers leaving for the front and the wounded coming back. And she's remarked how she saw in their eyes this special light of the soul because of these very intense experiences they were going through. You know? This uplifting hour of stress. That's when men answer to the touch of greater things. You know? Or it can happen that we get lifted up by some grace, by some strong hand. You know? We can breathe heaven air for some time, but then, and it's described even for King Aswapati, how the descent happens. We slide back, you know, to the mud from which we climbed or were lifted up. And there we feel at home. There we feel, yeah, this is where I belong, no? They we feel a relief in this safe return to the friendly, familiar base. Something in us, our soul, may be weeping because we've missed some great opportunity. But we accept those moments of fall. And it's very difficult for us to progress because of this feeling that it's not wise to try to rise above the common level of humanity, to be the common man, they think, the best. Don't want to be too different. You want to live as others live. You need a very strong aspiration to free you from that kind of feeling of needing to belong to the ordinary, a friendly base. Yes, Patricia.
Well, it's very comforting to know that we don't have to have the way of stress. We don't have to go through the hell of suffering because a strong hand can lift us and a hand is mother and sure.
Yeah.
Now we have an option, which is not available before.
And of course, that moment of stress, it may not always be suffering. It may be something else that's very uplifting.
Because she sees also, we still have the need to fall, but she's with us in the fall. And
yeah, in that passage in book one about King Aswapati, it says, you know, that he was lifted up and he had these wonderful experiences, but then he had to sink down because of the gravity of Earth's pull. But then Sri Aurobindo says, but this too the supreme diplomat can use. Because with these falls, something from that height follows us down. And it's by this repeated rising and falling that the transformation begins to happen. Yes, Don?
I interpret mud here as being nature. From mud comes all that we are, that we live, we eat, we build with, and so on there. It's a good thing. It really is a good thing. And we are rightfully attached to it until somehow a change will take place.
It's physical nature.
Yeah.
It's the needs of our
body. Things coming out of the mud.
Mm.
We think of mud as an ugly, really not.
The lotus grows out of the mud, no? It's one of the names of the lotus.
The lotus come out of the mud.
The Pankajan, mud-born. That's one of the names of the lotus. So, and yes, if we want the divine life on earth, then this transforming process has to happen. But here, Godhead is trying to explain or convince Savitri that a permanent transformation for the earth is not possible. That's what he's, I think. And he's here in the last part of the passage that was read, he says it's not advisable. No. Every creature has his fixed place in nature, and this should not be easily disturbed. He doesn't say it can't ever be disturbed, but it shouldn't be easily disturbed because there's this settled order, this balance in the creation, the perpetual order of the universe. Yes.
In aphorisms, Sri Aurobindo says that hard is it to be in the world leading a life of ordinary man? Free.
Yes.
And it is difficult.
But that's why we should have to try for it.
Yes.
It has to be. Yeah. That we can say in one way that's the goal of the integral yoga.
May I read another one concerning the sufferings? That is aphorism 310. There are two who are unfit for greatness and freedom. The man who has never been a slave to another, and the nation that has never been under the yoke of foreigners.
Under the yoke of foreigners. Yes.
The yoke of something else. Certain essential qualities can only develop through suffering and difficulties. Men run away from them in their ignorance, but the supreme law imposes them on those he has chosen to represent him on earth in order to hasten their development.
Hmm.
For he is the supreme wisdom.
Hmm. Nice.
This is because I got a mail, this colleague from me in the office of the head, that she's in America at the moment, and it seems that people put up, I want the president who has been a drug addict, who has been this, I want a man like that, you know, all the sufferings, queuing in the line for the green card. The blah, 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 blah.
Yes, that's quite wise, huh?
Huh?
That's right. We want to, I want a leader to know what it is,
exactly,
all these experiences.
Yes. And so I thought to answer this,
with
but
this.
Then I said, it sounds he's looking for me, but that's okay. That was my personal joke.
Welcome.
Stark on
me? Yes. Stark.
Ready to post it.
I always have difficulty in explaining this word stark. I know exactly what it means, but it's a bit stark.
Stark.
He speaks about the stark economy. So what does it mean, really? I mean, in what other words can we put it?
Basic.
Hmm?
It's a basic economy.
Yes. Clearly defined.
Yeah.
It means bare, spare, unadorned, but it can also mean harsh.
Yes. On the verge of disaster.
Mm. Harsh, perhaps, is the good here. Mm. And austere. So, nature's economy, the way that she balances things, can seem rather tough to us, no? Mm. In the stark economy of cosmic life. Yeah. But in that economy, each creature has his appointed place and his appointed task, and therefore he is bound by the form of his nature and also by the force of his spirit. His place is somehow a balance or an agreement worked out between these two, the form of the nature and the force of the spirit. So this fixed place which he has and this harsh economy of the cosmos, if this were easily disturbed, it would break the settled balance of created things. There's an order there. And now he's going to speak a little more about that.
When I see lines like this, I can hardly contain myself, because I always see, I mean, cosmic life, Shadavan, it's not Earth.
Not only Earth.
Yes.
But we are, the Earth is a kind of microcosm of the universe, and we are microcosms of the universe too. All the world's possibilities are hid in man, as a tree hides in its seed, he says somewhere else.
So the potential for the full universe is actually, and sometimes it's very big.
Didn't we read, perhaps it's a bit further on, about the inconscient, that man is the key?
Yes.
We read that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just a bit, just a little further down the page. So Prasad, you will read, huh?
If men were not and all were brilliant gods, the immediate things there would then be lost, by which the spirit awake in matter sleeps.
Winds.
Accepting the circuits of middle way, by heavy toil and slow aeonic steps, reaching the bright miraculous fringe of God, into the glory of the lower soul, my will, my call is there in men and things, but the inconscient lies at the world's grave back and draws to its breast of night and death and sleep. Imprisoned in its dark and dumb abyss, a little consciousness it lets escape, but jealous of the growing light holds back, close to the obscure edge of its cave, as if a fond ignorant mother kept her child tied to her apron string of wishes. The inconscient could not breathe without man's mind. The mystery of the world its sleep has made. Man is its key to unlock the conscious door.
Let's pause there. So if there weren't any human beings, and everyone was a brilliant god, then the step, the evolutionary step represented by humanity, would be lost. And that's a very important step, because the spirit is using this ladder of planes. It wakes up in matter, and then it winds upwards, the spiral staircase. It accepts the circuits, these spiral circuits, of the middle way, the earthly stage. The spirit, this is the spirit, climbing upwards by heavy toil and slow aeonic steps. The process of evolution takes eons, huge spaces of time, to reach at last the bright, miraculous fringe of God. Can begin to reach the higher levels, no? Breaking out into the glory of the Oversoul. He says, this step is needed, earth and earth beings and human beings. So they can't all be transformed. They can't all become heavenly beings. And then he starts to say something else. He says, my will and my call is there in men and things. But there's this opposite pull. The Lord's call is one thing, but there's this opposite pull of the inconscient. That's lying at the back of everything, the world's gray back. And it's always dragging us down towards its breast of night, of darkness, death, sleep. Every night it draws us into itself. So we start off, or the spirit starts off, imprisoned in the dark and dumb abyss of the inconscient. But the inconscient lets just a little bit of consciousness escape. But then it gets scared. It sees it, so the light's growing stronger and stronger, and it holds it back. It doesn't let it escape too far. Holds it back close to the shadowy, dark edges of its cave. And he gives this amusing little picture, as if the inconscient is an over-careful mother who keeps her child tied to her apron strings, the apron strings of nescience, of not knowing, of having no knowledge. But this all has to go on, because without the human mind, the inconscient wouldn't be able to begin to understand the mystery of this universe that it's made in its sleep. No? Man is the human race is a key by which it opens a door, a conscious door, a door of consciousness. But it's not using that key. It's still keeping all of us dangled in its grasp, and it draws its giant circle of darkness around our thoughts. It keeps our hearts closed to the supernal light. Let's just, yes.
in Mother's agenda, the Mother Nature was asking the mother why you are in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, she agreed to collaborate.
Yes.
So it looks like the key is handed over to us.
Yes. Or used, being used. Mm.
But Shravan also showing the sand opens the door without key. I tell question to Kirinbhai.
Mm.
You open the door without key. He tell me that.
Somewhere in Savitri he says the key is lying underneath the threshold. It's in that cave of inconscient. The world is a paradox with God for key. But the key is hid and by the inconscient kept. So anyway, let's read one more passage. This Naren.
High and dazzling limit lines above, a black and blinding border is below. His mind is closed between two permanents. He seeks through words and images the truth, and pouring on surfaces and smooth outsides, or dipping cautious feet in shallow seas. Even his knowledge is ignorance. He is barred out from his own inner depths. He cannot look on the face of the unknown. He shall
how
shall he see with the omniscience eyes? How shall he will with omnipotent toes? Oh, too compassionate and eager dawn, leave to the serving eons tardy face and the working of the inconscient will, leave to its imperfect light the earthly rays. All shall be done by a long act of time.
Mm, thank you. So high above us, there's this high and dazzling limit of the superconscious, above the golden lid. And below, there's this black and blinding border of the inconscious. So the human mind is somehow closed between these two firmaments, these fixed, firm levels. Human beings have to seek through words and image for the truth. And we try to gain knowledge by poring on surfaces, looking minutely, closely at the surfaces and the brute, rough outsides of things. Or we dip cautious feet in shallow seas. The seas are not deep, but they must be very cold. We're very careful about going into these seas of inner consciousness. We only go into the shallows. We don't want to go deeper. So as a result, even his knowledge is an ignorance. It's as if there's a barrier barring us out from our own inner depths. Even with Savitri in book 7, we read about what pressure she has to exert to break through that barrier to get into the inner depths. So the human being cannot look on the face of the unknown. So how do you expect, Savitri, you're being absolutely unreasonable, how do you expect that human beings are going to be able to see with the eyes of the omniscient? How are they going to be able to will with the force and the strength of the omnipotent? So then he tells her, you are a too compassionate and eager dawn. She's bringing the new light, but he says, you're in too much of a hurry and you're showing too much compassion. Wait, leave to the circling eons, tardy pace, the slow process of the ages, and the working of the inconscient will. Finally, it will work things out. Wait for that. Leave this earthly race of human beings to its imperfect mental light. Everything will be done in the long act of time. So if you remember, this is more or less what the Supreme Mother told Aswapati. Do you remember? He wanted, in book three, he was asking, as Savitri is asking, for her to save earth and men. And she said, don't be in such a hurry. Human race is not ready yet. It all has to take much longer time, but it will happen. Just wait for that.
Even death said that. Death.
Maybe death has also said it. But to the Divine Mother, Aswapati said, but Mother, it's taking too long. No? So please, won't you send an emanation of yourself to the earth to speed things up a bit? And she said yes. And because of that, Savitri was born. No? That is her work, to be too eager and compassionate and push and change things. No? But he is still trying to slow her down. All shall be done by the long act of time.
Where does it fit in with the climate change and all these things happening at this time, with that dance between moving on with this race of men and what Brad, like a
We have come here at a pivotal time, no doubt, and we've all accepted to come here at this time because we were warned it would be pivotal. But how it's going to work out, I have no idea. I can't see with the omniscient eyes, but I have faith that he's working things out in the best possible way. But I also think we may have to go through a very, very tough time. Right now here in Tamil Nadu, we've got this terrible drought. Nobody knows what is going to happen. So we are part of the earth. And one prediction I've seen about climate change is that the whole system is going to collapse within 20 years. So
I have to comment on that because there's a contrary report that Ms. McPherson doesn't know what he's talking about. I don't know which is true, which is not.
Well, it's probably somewhere in between. There's going to be a very, very tough time.
It'll be tough, but
by the Lord's grace, probably we'll come through and hopefully into a better situation. Something has to change. But the only thing we can do is to change ourselves. So that even if there's a worldwide disaster, whatever we have managed to achieve in our own lifetime will not be lost. It'll be there for the future.
There is a nice thing of Mama that says, connect to your soul. Go towards its vibration, the soul's aspiration. The sun will rise.
The sun will rise.
Will always rise. I mean, the world goes on. The only thing you can do is just go there and aspire for the divine and to unite and do your job.
Our trouble.
The stream will come.
Our trouble is knowing what our job is.
But I think what you said, the importance is your faith. That is important. Not to put your thoughts in the disaster, but to have faith for you. Immediately you change the atmosphere.
I think actually now we should listen to Mother's voice.
Imagine thing though about rain. Mother taught of prayer to the children.
Why aren't you organizing it, Patty?
People should do. Why complain about the drought? Everything is Mother's will.
she gave a dance for the small children to do and an invocation. But we can all invoke. Yeah. Yes.
The last one goes a little bit further than we did.
14 or 17.
Start here at 16.
16 only?
Yeah, 17. 16, 17, and it's quite long. Hmm?
Yeah, okay, only these two.
Yeah.
So it's not third, it's a bit behind, but he speaks here, yeah, that's really so.
You've got a new one from...
Yes.
So then you can start with 15, 16, 17.
Absolute and low. Teaching the whiteness of a boundless sky. Teaching the passion of a soulless earth. Teaching the burning of a worldwide sun. To look upon each other, soul, soul, soul. Then, light and answer from the heart to listen. A voice soared up, whose magic sound, who turned.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.